I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. After last year's stunning loss to President Trump, Democrats think this week's election victories could be a game changer. But is it all really unexpected?
We've seen wave elections 2006, 2010, 2014, and I have every expectation that we will see another wave kind of election in 2018. It's just the way that we've been doing it.
I'm Dave Anthony. Will Russia be meddling with the U.S. again in North Korea?
Putin has been, and by nature, a troublemaker.
And I'm Tammy Bruce. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
One political party is fired up and ready to go this week.
I believe that this was a rejection not only of President Trump, but of the policies that he and the Republican Party seem to be adopting.
That's Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer after Democrat Phil Murphy beat out Republican Kim Guadagno in the New Jersey governor's race. Republican Ed Gillespie lost the Virginia governor's race to Democrat Ralph Northam.
Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness, that we will not condone hatred and bigotry, and to end the politics that have torn this country apart.
President Trump tweeted that Gillespie hadn't embraced him enough, and that's why he lost. But is it? President Trump is the fifth consecutive president to see Virginia and New Jersey go to the opposing party in their first year in office.
That's right. And it sort of gets at a larger dynamic in off-year elections that I think is pretty common, particularly when the president's approval is not great, which is the case with President Trump.
Kyle Condick is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics.
Often the party that doesn't hold the White House is just more motivated to come out for all sorts of different reasons. And you could sort of see that there was a Democratic voter surge, and I think that was fueled by anger at the president.
Does it really go to anger at Trump, or was this partly not surprising because Trump didn't win either of these states?
I think that you know, New Jersey has obviously become a very Democratic state in recent decades. Virginia was a Republican state for a long time. It has now become a state that is a little bit to the left of the national average. You know, the Clinton-Kaine ticket, of course, Senator Tim Kaine is from Virginia and probably helped a little bit in that state. So, yeah, this was fertile ground for the Democrats, and particularly where you saw Democratic turnout really spike and where Ralph Northam did really well and Ed Gillespie did poorly are in places, you know, kind of the wealthy, affluent, well-educated suburbs of Northern Virginia, Greater Richmond, and Hampton Roads area. That's where Northam really won this race. One potential upside for Republicans is that the Trump base in certain parts of Virginia, I think, sort of stuck with Gillespie. And there are a number of places that are having important elections next year. West Virginia's Senate race is a good example. Where basically the electorate's going to look a lot more like it did in Western Virginia than it did in the big urban areas in Virginia, and that could be good for Republicans next year. Again, in a state like West Virginia, even if the national environment is not that great.
I know that Northam won in some Republican-dominated congressional districts. Are Democrats looking at that right now, looking at where they did better than they anticipated or expected in some of these congressional districts or counties, and saying, okay, how do we do this in the other districts that we need? They need, what, 24 seats?
Yeah, 24 seats. So, of course, they're going to focus a lot of attention on the 23 Republican-held seats that Hillary Clinton won in the presidential race last year. So they're going to have to win at least some Trump-won territory, and that's where a district like Virginia 2, the Hampton Roads swing seat that Trump won by a few points, comes into play, and some other districts across the country. But they're going to have to make up some ground in place, not just places where Trump does poorly, but also places where Trump did well.
While the Virginia and New Jersey governor's races were two of the big Democratic wins this week, a lot more happened around the country that got the party fired up. In Washington state, power's back in Democratic hands in both houses and the governor's mansion after a Senate victory there. In Delaware County, Pennsylvania, Democrats outpolled Republicans in the county council election for the first time in history, winning both seats that were up for grabs. Democrats now outregister Republicans there. Democrats celebrated having five first-time black mayors elected, along with four transgender people, with Virginia electing its first openly transgender state lawmaker.
I think it does reinvigorate Democrats. And again, it demonstrates this sort of usual pattern you see in American politics where, an unpopular president can be a drag on his party. So, and it's not necessarily predictive for 2018, but I do think that Republicans have to figure out a way to help the president improve his numbers. How they do that, I don't know. I think that they're hopeful that if they pass this tax cut bill, that will help. And maybe it will, maybe it won't. Sort of hard to say. And they want to be able to point to some accomplishments they can make. But as long as the president's numbers are underwater, and they are significantly so right now, that puts a lot of Republicans at risk in a midterm kind of environment.
If we're talking about 2018, we're talking about voter intensity.
Fox News Channel political editor Chris Steierwalt.
We're talking about which side, which party has the base voters who are most fired up and ready to go. And I would say that for Republicans, the point of concern should be this. Their voters turned out in very large numbers. No question about it. Turned out in larger numbers than when they had their governor's contest 4 years ago, and got pretty close to winning. They got blown out this time, even though they turned out in larger numbers. The Democrats swamped them. The Democratic turnout was enormous, and we saw it not just in Virginia, but also in Maine, where you had Obamacare expansion approved by the electorate, in statehouse races in Washington, across the country. You had big, big Democratic turnout. And even though Republicans were firing at a higher rate than they were 4 years ago, it just wasn't enough.
When you look at, let's say, the Virginia race, did anything happen in any particular county or district that we should take note of here, that either party should be taking note of here as they look to see how a Democrat won in Virginia?
I don't know how the Republicans are going to do with Donald Trump, but I don't think they're going to do as well as they did when they had Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, who will not leave Democrats alone, continues to be a thorn in their side. The Republican successes of 2016 had a lot to do with what a rotten candidate Hillary Clinton was, and maybe not as much to do with who Donald Trump was. There was probably a strong anybody but her quotient out there. I think, but as we look at 2018, as we look at what's going on now, the Republicans are going to probably suffer to some degree in 2018 because of Donald Trump and because presidents generally see their parties lose ground in their first midterm. The only one in modern political history who didn't was George W. Bush, but that was right in the wake of September 11th. I would expect that Democrats would probably have a pretty good year in 2018. They probably can make the House competitive. I don't know about the Senate. It's a very rough map for them. But when you see Democratic intensity like this, then yeah, you have to feel, if you're a Democrat, you have to look at this week's results and say that it's really there. It's not a mirage. There really is that kind of voter intensity out there.
You look at states like Alabama, which is having a special election in December. That's a pretty red state, solidly red state. But when we talk about the bellwether states or the states that shift, that's an entirely different ballgame. So when we talk about Democrats being motivated, is it enough to just have enough Democrats motivated? Do we have enough party switchers or independents in those states?
Well, it was enough to give the Democrats a 9-point win in the governor's race in a purple state. I wrote that you have to, I said, when you're riding a wave, use your own surfboard. Republicans have to figure out not how to act this way or act that way. They've got to be true to their own constituents and true to themselves. You cannot set a dial. There's no amount of faking that you're going to do to survive a given political climate, especially when it's intense. We've seen wave elections 2006, 2010, 2014. I have every expectation that we will see another wave kind of election, or most every expectation that we'll see another wave kind of election in 2018. It's just the way that we've been doing it.
Democrats reinvigorated because of this week's election. But when it comes to their messaging, can it simply just be anti-Trump? Or do they still need to unify and clean up other messes as we watch former DNC chair Donna Brazile talk about her new book, heavily criticizing the Clinton campaign, and that campaign was just a year ago.
Well, it was good enough for Republicans in 2010. I don't know why the Democrats would change. I don't think that the Democrats are interested in reinventing the wheel. If your goal is to win elections, the Republicans already put the blueprint out in 2010. Oppose everything. Say horrible things about the other guy. The Republicans sacked their own RNC chairman and had their own debacle and had terrible recriminations from 2008 and Sarah Palin and John McCain and went through all that stuff. But in the end, in 2010, their base was fired up and they went and punished the Democrats and for Obamacare and for whatever else. For Democrats, yeah, it doesn't help to have this civil war, but that's more about how they could lose 2020 than how it's going to affect 2018. Right now, for 2018, all they need to do is what Republicans did before.
This is Tammy Bruce with your Fox News commentary coming up.
President Trump's been crisscrossing Asia, with one big issue dominating his talks, North Korea.
Some people said that my rhetoric is very strong, but look what's happened with very weak rhetoric over the last 25 years.
That was in Japan. In South Korea, his message was,
I want peace through strength.
Hoping North Korea's leader hears this.
The weapons you're acquiring are not making you safer. They are putting your regime in grave danger.
Urging every nation to join the call for Kim Jong-un to put
a stop to your development of ballistic missiles and complete, verifiable, and total denuclearization.
The president went to China to get help, and at a conference in Vietnam today and tomorrow, he's expected to meet with Russian leader Vladimir Putin.
The Russians can be troublemakers when it comes to North Korea.
Gordon Chang is a Daily Beast columnist and author of the book Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World.
As President Trump said in Seoul, you know, if we get the Chinese to do the right things, the Russians will follow. So I think that it's going to be an issue of making sure that Vladimir Putin doesn't cause trouble in the Far East.
Vladimir Putin, in October, said that it would be unwise with a military strike because he wasn't sure it was even possibly being successful, that they might have hidden weapons programs somewhere else. Vladimir Putin has also said that our statements, what the president has done, may be backing North Korea into a corner, and there's no resolution to this.
We are going to have to back North Korea into a corner, largely because we don't have any choice. Putin might be theoretically right about that, but the context is that the United States, in order to protect the American people, in order to protect our allies and friends, are going to have to do some things which are going to be risky.
Would Vladimir Putin like it if this just kept on going?
Oh, he would love this. You know, Putin has been, and by nature, a troublemaker. He's obviously much more interested in what he calls his near abroad, which is border in Europe. North Korea has never been at the top of his list of priorities. And indeed, during the six-party talks of last decade, Russia was essentially not a factor at all. But, you know, Putin will always needle the United States. And at this particular time, Putin would probably like to see calm on the Far East, unless he thinks he can get an advantage from us that he can parlay to some advantage in, for instance, the Baltics.
This wouldn't be the first time Presidents Trump and Putin meet. Their first face-to-face was in Europe back in July.
President Putin and I have been discussing various things, and I think it's going very well. We've had some very, very good talks.
Well, then after a long two-hour sit-down, Secretary of State Tillerson emerged saying President Trump opened the meeting questioning Putin about Russian election interference in a very robust exchange, and he denied meddling. Russia's president also dismissed all the allegations, talking to NBC's Megyn Kelly.
You people are so creative over there. Good job. Your lives must be boring.
But the issue still hangs over President Trump. Just last week, his former campaign manager was indicted by the special counsel investigating. Paul Manafort and an associate are charged with financial crimes dating back to their work in Ukraine before the campaign, prompting Manafort's attorney to proclaim outside the courts.
Well, I think you all saw today that President Donald Trump was correct. There is no evidence that Mr. Manafort or the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government.
Democrats are hardly convinced, especially with a former Trump campaign advisor, George Papadopoulos, pleading guilty to lying to the FBI about his Russian contacts, which has prompted congressional investigators to want to question Attorney General Sessions again about what he knew. But for the president, the focus of the trip remains the same, North Korea.
Seoul is quite interesting. I think it went much better than I expected. There are big differences between the United States and President Moon Jae-in, the newly elected leader in South Korea. But it appears that President Trump navigated a number of shoals here. And indeed, this attempted trip to the demilitarized zone with President Moon, although they weren't able to land, nonetheless, it showed the unity of the alliance because President Moon, who didn't want Trump to go to the DMZ, nonetheless decided to accompany him. And that is important.
South Korea is a very important cog in this wheel of North Korea denuclearization. But of course, China may be the most important.
Well, China is important because China has overwhelming leverage over the North Koreans. The Chinese say that they don't. The Chinese like to point out the icy relations that they have with Pyongyang. But that's really only on the surface. When the Chinese want something from the North Koreans, they get it. And we got a strong hint of that beginning in the middle of September. The last North Korean launch of a missile was September 15th. There have been no launches since then. That's significant because this period has coincided with the run-up to the Communist Party's 19th National Congress. And so what the Chinese, I think, said to the North Koreans, there shall be no provocations during this most sensitive time in our political calendar.
When North Korea test-launched a long-range missile that could threaten the U.S., it prompted a war of words over the summer, the president calling Kim Jong-un rocket man and Kim Jong-un calling the president a dotard or senile old person. A new North Korean statement Wednesday said the U.S. must get rid of the old lunatic after President Trump detailed in a speech in Seoul what he called the horror of life there.
An estimated 100,000 North Koreans suffer in gulags, toiling in forced labor.
Saying it's so bad, North Koreans pay bribes to government officials to be sent abroad to live as slaves just to get out of a country that was founded by Kim Jong-un's grandfather in 1948.
North Korea is not the paradise your grandfather envisioned. It is a hell that no person deserves.
We forget, because we're in a democracy, we forget that leaders of authoritarian states, leaders of dictatorships, are insecure. And this is not only Kim Jong-un, this is also Xi Jinping, this is also Vladimir Putin. And so therefore, we don't raise the issue of human rights because we don't understand the effect that it has on our adversaries. So I think it was very good for President Trump to talk about this, to dwell on this.
Is he right?
He's absolutely right. Kim Il-sung actually had a very prosperous society in the 1950s, in the 1960s. It was far more prosperous than China. You had refugees from China going into North Korea during the Cultural Revolution, which was that 10-year period starting in 1966. North Korea was more prosperous than South Korea for quite some time until the early 1970s. People had money. People had food. They had a fairly good high standard of living.
Not now, though.
Not now.
North Korea, will they ever give up their weapons?
They won't give up their weapons if we don't change the incentive structure for them. America's campaign to cut off money to North Korea has really been accelerated under the Trump administration. And actually, we're starting to see some success. We know that a number of countries have ended economic ties with the North Koreans. And we've also heard unconfirmed rumors, but they do seem to be correct, that junior officials in Pyongyang, part of the favored class of the Kim regime, are not getting their rations from the public distribution system. If this is indeed correct, it is a stunning development. And last Friday, North Korean diplomats started to complain in public about America's sanction program, which they called, quote unquote, brutal, and they called, quote unquote, genocide. That means we're getting to them, and that means President Trump has to continue what has so far been an effective campaign. Especially President Trump needs to enforce his September 21 executive order, which essentially told the world, if you do business with the North Koreans, you're not doing business with the United States. That's an important step forward. It needs to be enforced. The administration is devoting a lot of effort to that. And I think that, you know, we have the makings of a solution, because at some point the North Koreans are going to realize that they have no choice but to give in to the demands of the international community.
Gordon, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Download and subscribe to original podcast from Fox News Radio.
It's time to get caught up on what's happened and what's next. I'm Jared Halpern from Washington.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tammy.
Bruce.
What's on your mind?
We learn a lot about ourselves and others in the midst of a crisis. Hollywood and liberals had no problem revealing themselves for what they are again in the aftermath of the horror of the Texas church massacre. Liberals, these worshipers of failed big government, decided to condemn people of faith by mocking those who pray on a day when 26 Christians were murdered. But it was more than mocking prayer. The insistence that prayer is useless implies God does not exist, and only government can make the difference. Some of the more venal comments make that implication clear. Actor Will Wheaton, best known for being typecast as the smug and irritating Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation, responded to Representative Paul Ryan's tweet for prayers. Mr. Wheaton tweeted back, quote, "The murdered victims were in a church. If prayers did anything, they'd still be alive, you worthless sack of expletive." Actor Michael McKean, currently on AMC's Better Call Saul, the TV show, chimed in on Twitter as well, quote, "They were in church. They had the prayers shot right out of them. Maybe try something else." Mocking people who pray in response to shock and suffering is obscene and corrupt. And while it is not the only answer, prayer is a foundational part of change and is a powerful and important act. It also must be paired with action, because the divine is not encumbered by the human interest in micromanaging our daily lives. The irony of the reaction by liberals to maniacs who use guns is to call on their god of government for more gun control. We now know that government bureaucracy failed us in Texas when the system failed to include Devin Kelly in the FBI database, allowing him to purchase his weapons. It also failed us the same way in Charleston, and it failed us also at Virginia Tech. Many liberals also decided to attack the NRA after the Texas massacre, and the NRA did play a role in stopping the slaughter. Stephen Williford, the local hero, a plumber who also happens to be a former NRA instructor, grabbed his own rifle, ran across the street, and shot the madman. He ended the mass murder, saving an untold number of lives. He then teamed up with local Johnny Langendorf when the two engaged the shooter in a high-speed chase, which ended with Mr. Kelly's suicide. Recounting the horror of the shooting in Texas, a television host tearfully asked on air, "What does this say about us?" Actually, it says nothing about us and everything about the one maniac who did it. Despite the efforts of some, we will not be defined by the few individual crazies who are psychopathic mass murderers. We will be defined by the prayerful and the decent. The truth is, America is populated with millions of Stephen Williford's and Johnny Langendorf's, people quietly living their lives only to emerge as heroes when coming to the aid of friends and strangers alike. What does that say about us? Everything.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.